Hey, this is Ryan with the Daily Sales Dish podcast. I have a good friend of mine and a mentor to me, Brian Sexton, on the show today, in addition to our co-host, Sam. Can you guys say hi?
Hey, Brian, how are you?
It is so good to be on the Daily Sales Dish with Ryan and Sam. Guys, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on today.
We appreciate it, Brian. Thanks a lot.
So I wanted to start with your podcast, Brian, the Intentional Encourager podcast, and just kind of what the purpose is and what you're aiming to accomplish with the podcast for all our listeners.
You know, Ryan, I have always maintained in the last couple of years that I've really had a presence on LinkedIn. I've always maintained that I want to bring value to my network. You know, I want to bring some different things to my network. And so, I felt like a few months back that I was hearing from a lot of people that were experts. You know, I was seeing a lot of expertise, and there's nothing wrong with expertise. You know, we all want people around us that will bring us expertise, but I wasn't seeing a lot of encouragement. I wasn't seeing a lot of people encouraging other people. And so, you know, I started doing it a little bit with 60 Seconds with Sexton, my video series. And then I really, after the first of the year, Ryan, just really felt like, you know, taking intentional encouragement to a whole new level. And of course, now with the COVID-19 situation that we all find ourselves in all over the world, doesn't matter whether you're in North America or you're overseas like Sam is, you know, that we need to encourage each other. And so that's really been a big hit. I decided I wanted to do a podcast for a while. And so it was kind of like now or never. And so that kind of bringing those two merging influences and thoughts together. And I almost started to call it encouraging people. And then I saw another podcast out there that was everyday people. So I thought, what do I want to do? And I thought, well, I've been using the hashtag intentional encouragement. Let's just call it the Intentional Encourager podcast. So it's doing well. You can get it on all the podcast platforms. And so it would be so kind if you give that a listen. And so maybe what we can do, guys, we can take a version of the Daily Sales Dish and move it to Intentional Encourager for a podcast. We'll get that set up and we'll talk about that over there. But it's people sharing stories about their lives, you know, what they've overcome and you know, a good piece of intentional encouragement for folks every week. So I'd be honored if people would take a listen to it.
Definitely. So you brought up something that really stuck out to me, looking for value on LinkedIn. And I know value differs based on someone's perception. So how do you go about providing value on LinkedIn, Brian?
Ryan, I think you have to be intentional with your content. I was back and forth with a gentleman yesterday, and he was talking about consistency. And I really value consistency. That's probably my number one strength that I value is consistency. And we were talking about that, and he pushed back and he said, well, you know, I have to bring quality to my network. And I said, here's the thing you have to understand. Your network looks at you for consistency, because a lot of times, Ryan, every piece of content that we put on LinkedIn is not going to hit a home run with everybody. It's impossible to hit a home run. You know, I think I'm a baseball fan, and you think about baseball. If you make an out, if you fail 7 out of 10 times that you go to the plate, you are a great hitter. You're considered an outstanding hitter. And so think about that for a second. Even when you put out content every day, it's not going to resonate with your audience. And so I have just made it a simple rule. I'm not going to comment on anything that I can't add value to. I'm not going to post anything that I can't add value to. By extension, the Intentional Encourager podcast is designed to do just that. It's not going to resonate with everybody. Nothing always does. But to me, engagement that adds value to somebody is what I'm all about. That's what I'm striving to bring to my network.
So you brought up, like, I'm just writing notes here. You brought up a couple interesting things. Now, with your customers, I think it's a lot similar to your LinkedIn strategy. You're trying to provide value on a consistent basis. Am I right with that?
Yeah, and I tell you where I learned that. For me, the hardest thing that I learned over 20 years ago when I first got into sales was consistency. And I tell you how I learned it, Ryan. About 2 years into my sales career, I took a job with a large food service distributor. And I took over a mature territory. This was one of the oldest sales territories in the company. The company had been in existence since the late 1950s. And this was one of their early territories. And so fast forward, this was 1997. And you talk about a 40-year-old territory. In some shape or form, there were customers that had been with this food service distributor since the late 1950s. And so what I had to learn very quickly was the customers that I was stepping into this role, into this territory, had certain times and certain places and certain, you know, certain days that they would see the salesperson. And so I really had to learn consistency pretty quickly to bring myself into that role so that I could continue to maintain, not only maintain a high service level, Ryan, but to continue to build on that and build that territory. So that taught me consistency really quickly, right out of the chute in my sales career. And from there, I just learned that if I'm consistent, everything else in my sales territory will come together.
So it sounds really like, versus being transactional, it's more like relational, or trying to build those relationships. And that sounds like a difficult task, having mature territory. Like, they're not used to you. They don't know your style, how you handle things. So how did you kind of approach that?
Ryan, it's funny. I remember a conversation that I had with a sales rep that I worked with. And you know, I transitioned. I was working with this particular food distributor. I had worked with them and their salespeople, but as a broker. So we represented different lines that they sold. And I worked with their salespeople. And one of the guys was a good friend of mine when I transitioned over to actually working for this distributor. He called me sexy. And that's a little disarming when you're a guy and another guy's calling you sexy. It's a little disarming. But he called me sexy and he said, "Sexy, I want to tell you something." He said, "It'll take you 3 years to figure out what you're doing." And it did. It took me about 3 years to really find my stride because, one, you're right, Ryan. I had to learn my customers. I had to learn what they liked, what they didn't like, what they valued and what they didn't value. You know, and so that took me a while to get to learn that part of it. Number two, it took me a while to learn product. What product fit with them. And in the restaurant business, it was really important, you know, to find products that those people could make money on. And the third thing, it took me a while to learn the process, you know, really, really diving into on how people buy, what were their buying motives, you know, their dominant buying motives. How to really put everything together. And so, yeah, it took me a while inside of that territory, but I'll share this with you. In 3 years, I became the salesperson of the year in that distributor because everything came together. And I knew at that point, I knew exactly what I could bring to that customer base and how I was able to be successful. Ryan, I'll share a quick story with you. I had a customer that owned a pizza shop. And this customer and his partners, there were two guys that owned the pizza shop. And they started getting into some things. I won't get into all the details because if I did, you would not believe it. But these two guys that were partners decided to dissolve their partnership. And so the one partner took on two new partners and he bought the pizza shop from the other partner. And the other partner went and started his own pizza shop, probably 5-6 miles away in a town across the river in another state. And the one partner that had kept the pizza shop and brought the other two guys in, he came to me one day and he said, "Listen," he said, "I know that," and I'll call him Jim. "I know that Jim wants to do business with you." And he said, "It's okay with me because you have a family you have to feed too. And he said, it's not going to affect us in one bit for you to do business with Jim. And Bob was saying that to me about his old partner, Jim. And it made me understand, Ryan, to your point about relationships, that I had built the relationship with those guys. I'll fast forward a little bit. Jim's pizza shop takes off, and Jim buys 100% of his items from me, buys just about everything from me. Bob and his other two partners keep me in there at near 100%. They had some contractual things they had to buy because they were part of a small franchise, but they kept me at nearly 100%, and they started growing, and every new pizza shop that they grew into, they took me with them. So not only did I get to keep Jim and his one pizza shop, but I kept Bob and the four others that he opened. And so to that point of relationship, it took me to that point in my career where I knew how to leverage those relationships and keep everybody happy.
So I would take it a step further. You earned their trust. And the one partner was very transparent with you. I mean, how did you do that, Brian?
Well, again, I didn't share anything with the two of them, because here's the thing. They knew what the other was doing, and what Jim did across the river was a variation of what Bob was doing at his pizza shop. So, you know, there wasn't a lot of idea stealing and things like that. But again, Ryan, it goes back to what I've said on LinkedIn for a long time. People buy from people. And it's funny how I initially got to sell to that pizza shop in the first place was I got a lead from a competitor. My competitor came to me and said, I don't think I can help him, but I think you can. And I thought, man, she's setting me up. At first, I thought she set me up. And at first, she probably was, because I did a lot of running for them. I went and got them things that they ran out of. But at the end of the day, it worked out very, very well for me. And in fact, that competitor that referred me to that pizza shop, I ended up being her district sales manager several years later. And we had a nice laugh about that. So.
Sam, I think you can provide an interesting perspective to this topic as well. Being in outsourcing, that relationship is everything. So well, how do you maintain and grow those relationships through your outsourcing programs?
Okay. Well, it doesn't stop. Okay. The thing is, do you remember, Ryan, when we were talking about marketing and how do people market it when it comes down to digital marketing? At the end of the day, it has to end with a result. What is the result at the end of the day? Like, there should be a phone call made. Like, the interaction of meeting between the client and the business, at a certain point, it must happen, and it will happen. When it comes down to outsourcing, like, it's a bit hard. I'm not saying it's impossible. No, because let's say, as an example, a couple of companies I'm running over there in the U.S., one in Mississippi, three companies in New York, two companies in California. What we do, as a matter of fact, like, it's initiated by a phone call. Well, as a matter of fact, like, I'm the one who's closing. So at a certain point, like, we have to meet face to face. Like, sometimes those guys, they visit. Sometimes we go ahead and visit, because like, business cannot survive without a relationship. That's a fact. A social relationship can be moving to be a business relationship, and a business relationship can be moving vice versa to be a social relationship. So the interaction here is very important when it comes down to doing business. When it comes down to life, you have to understand what is people. Like, my focus in sales is not about the products. It was never about a service. No, it's all about people. Even at work, it's people. This is called people management. When you do understand how to manage people, how to deal with people, this is when you start to be successful. Same as Brian, like, I echo what Brian said, that he should understand what are the needs of his clients. What do they want? How can he be a value to them? That's a people-oriented person. A people-oriented person can do everything, by the way. And, like, aside from sales, if he is people oriented, he will succeed in managing. When you're able to manage, so you're able to convince. Managing equals convincing. Convincing is a part of sales. So plus, like, Brian brought something which really I like, which is consistency. When you're consistent, that means you're responsible. When you're responsible, you start doing, you start taking an action. You know exactly how to do it. You know when to do it. You know what to do. Through consistency, like, it's a combination with consistency, people management, the skills that you have got. Things will be able to be done. At that time, you're able to be succeeding. With that example that Brian said, people buying from people, Brian, do you remember that one when we were discussing it last night?
Yeah, I really now, like people buy from people.
Well, now the definition is clear. Now, this is exactly what I have told you, people buying from people. But in a different perspective, people can be an indirect way for marketing. So it's a person bought a product or subscribed to a service through a person. So that person is considered as a marketing tool or a marketing way how to sell. That's another definition for people buying from people.
What do you think, Brian?
Well, guys, I love this. And I'll share this with you as well, too. You know, in that role I was talking to you about where I worked for the food service distributor, the first NFL football game that I got to see in person, I saw with a customer. I went on a lot of golf trips with customers. I've done a lot of things and had a lot of social engagements and have shared experiences with customers. And so, again, the reason people buy from people, Ryan, works so well, and to Sam's point, is because at the end of the day, the this is all a people business. Sales is all a people business.
True.
Because you have to understand that it's not someone selling to you, rather it's someone selling with you. Because think about how we buy. A lot of times salespeople don't keep in mind how they themselves buy. And so they sell one way and buy a different way.
I love
it. Doesn't matter if they buy a hamburger, it doesn't matter if they're buying a new car, it doesn't matter if they're going to a store to buy a new shirt, if they're jumping online to buy a piece of equipment. A lot of times salespeople will go, we have to do this sales process and we have to do this and we have to do that. But then as salespeople stop and think about it for a minute, they don't think about how they buy themselves. And so I think when we're consistent in how we sell and how we buy, I think we're going to be better salespeople, because then we start to understand, okay, let me put myself in their position and understand something. So the pushback that I'm getting, is it really an objection, or did I not explain something well enough? If I were them, would I make, Ryan, here's what I would say. And I don't mean to talk in circles here, but the thought just came to my mind is that a lot of salespeople, if you held their feet to the fire, and you said to them, you're asking this buyer to buy your product. But if given the same situation and you were sitting across the table from you, would you buy your product? And would you buy from you?
See, that's something I really struggled with when I first started out. I had my own agenda. I knew what I wanted to accomplish. But what I didn't realize is sales is a lot more than just pushing your agenda, telling them what you offer. It's about understanding. I believe there's three important things for especially SDRs like myself. First, you have to understand the product. Then you have to understand how to sell the product. And then you have to learn how to sell in general, because things change over time. What works today may not work tomorrow. So it's all about being flexible and finding what's working now.
Well, I completely 100% echo what Brian said. Ryan, if you remember a couple of days ago when we were talking, when we were discussing sales and the way how I do it, I 100% agree with each and every single word that Brian said, because the way how it is happening, or the way how it should happen. Do you remember, Brian, when I told you we ourselves, as far as salespeople, sometimes we are customers at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we, like, the best way or the best practice how to bring, like, those two parts together is that people or salesmen in general, they should be treating sales in a kind of a different technique, which is sales combined with customer relation management and customer experience and customer satisfaction. When sales is combined with the knowledge of customer service, at that time, no salesperson will be struggling. At the same time, the customer themselves will not be struggling or not being defensive or not being in the mood of, oh, you know what, like, he's trying to scam me, he's trying to hustle me, he's trying to rob me. A lot of customers, like, this is what happens with them. They're always in the defense mode because most of the salespeople, they are focusing on, oh, you know what, like, I have to hit my target. It's nothing but my target. Well, this is the biggest mistake. And as a matter of fact, that goes, like, it goes upwards. It doesn't go downwards. What does it mean upwards? See, the pyramid, when the pyramid was built, it was built starting from the bottom to the top. So the top is the management. The management is always pushing to hit the target. And this is the biggest mistake. Oh, you did not achieve the target. Oh, you're not doing it. Oh, you know what? It's not for you. Oh, you know what? This is not made for you. You're not doing a good job. So what is happening here? Instead of getting the salespeople to focus on the lead or the prospect or the client or the customer, they are thinking about hitting the target.
Mm-hmm.
This is the biggest mistake.
Yeah, Sam, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but, okay. But you're 100% on it. And I love what you said a few minutes ago when you were talking about coming in person yourself to close the deal with that customer. Think about something for a minute. You have a lot of retailers and other businesses out there that offer insider discounts. So in other words, if you want to join the insiders for a certain fee, you get certain advantages that other buyers don't get. And a lot of customers, we think about it this way, customers love getting advantages over other customers, whether it's a pricing advantage, a service advantage, a product advantage. Why do you think some products, and we're talking over Zoom, you can start with a free product on Zoom, or you can upgrade, and you can continue to upgrade and continue to upgrade, to where you get all of their services unlocked. And there are some people that go right to the premium product and go, that's for me. I want everything. True. And I'm willing to pay for it. And so we've got to understand what is the most important thing to that customer. Again, I'll park on it here. Again, their dominant buying motive. And some customers just love the fact that the CEO of the company came to close them personally.
True.
That the guy at the top, that there's nobody in that company any more important than that guy right there. And he came to close me personally, and I have a relationship with him, and that's why I'm buying. And a lot of buyers want what other buyers don't get.
I 100% agree with each and every single word that you have said.
Yeah, I'm on board with that too.
Like,
Go ahead, Sam.
Go ahead, Ryan. Go ahead. That's fine.
It's just a quote that someone told me when I started inside sales, and it stuck with me. People love to buy, but they hate to be sold. I think that really echoes what we're talking about right now. People love the experience of buying a product, but they hate the pushiness, all the things that go along with that.
So Ryan, let's park on that a minute. I'm sorry, Sam.
It's okay.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. Let's park on that thought for a minute. So why do people love to buy? You know, think about it for a second. It is the emotional attachment. There are endorphins that are released when someone pulls the trigger and buys a particular product. So if I am hungry and I am going to go and I'm going to get some fast food and I'm hungry, the minute that I decide I'm going to buy, let's say I go to McDonald's and I go there and I place that order, I have made a buying decision that the minute I pull in that parking lot, I am all in on that buying decision with McDonald's. Then I go through the drive-thru and I order a quarter pounder with cheese and a medium fry and an unsweet iced tea. Again, I've made another buying decision. So I've decided who I'm going to buy from. I've decided what I'm going to buy. Did, at any point during that process, did price come into the equation? No, because I knew what I wanted and I knew who I wanted to buy from. And so when that bag comes through the window that's handed to me by a friendly McDonald's employee, and that bag's handed through the window, and I pull away and I take that first bite, then I have had, now my emotions are kicking in. Now it's like, oh, this is good. This is what I wanted. I'm totally satisfied. If everything comes together and the food's hot, and the fries are hot and everything comes together, there are emotions released there that say, oh man, this is great. This is exactly what I wanted. And it's the same thing in the buying process with a buyer. When everything comes together, this worked out really well. So that's why people love to buy and they hate to be sold. Because when I go through the drive-thru, Ryan, I don't want somebody to go, I know you ordered a quarter pounder with cheese, but we've got a special on Filet-O-Fish. Are you sure you don't want Filet-O-Fish? Well, no, I want a quarter pounder with cheese. Just give me what I want. Yeah, give me what I want. And so that's why people love to buy, because it's about control. And it's about releasing those emotions. Because when people are sold, think about it this way for a second. When people are sold, there is a feeling of, did I just get taken? Did the salesperson make commission off me? Was I just a number? All these different negative things come to mind because the buying experience got flipped from the customer being in control to the salesperson being in control. And whether the customer is in control or not, and that's why I say a great sales process is walking side by side with that customer, walking with them toward a buying decision that is more favorable, that's far more favorable for them than it is for you. And so that's why people loved, and it's a great Zig Ziglar quote, and I'm a huge Zig Ziglar fan. One of the highlights of one of my personal highlights was getting to interview Zig's son, Tom, on a morning talk show that I hosted. And I have a book out in my office autographed by Tom Ziglar, because his father had such an impact on me and the way that I thought about selling. So I'm really thankful, Ryan. Thank you for bringing up that comment, that quote from Zig Ziglar, because Zig is 100% correct.
Definitely.
I love the way how Brian brought it up. See, Brian, there is something like I would love to pinpoint in here. Your experience is amazing when it comes then to food industry. The food industry, mainly, like, it depends on psychological behavior, by the way, because mainly it depends, like, eating is combined with, like, when it comes down psychologically to the feelings of the human, it depends mainly on two things. It depends on the desire and the need, like the need you have to eat, why to survive and to live. The desire goes with the thing that you love more to eat or to have. The power of purchase, or the purchase power in the market, in any market, in all markets, the way how I look at it, when a guy is buying, it's different than a woman is buying. The guy is a spender. The woman is a saver, by the way. In sales, it is for a guy, it's hard to convince a guy. But a female or a woman can convince a guy and vice versa. In food, you're absolutely 100%, Brian, when it comes down, this is what I want. So this is what I will get. You cannot sell me and you cannot over, you, well, there's a probability that you will, he can oversell you because you might like it. But when it comes down to the purchase power itself, it has got different variables according to different markets. Like the food industry is different than software industry, is different than, like I would say, digital marketing industry, is different than like clothing industry, is different. But it mainly depends on people want to buy, so they will go ahead and buy. It's like one of the important questions that I got asked once is that, what do you think about a TV?